questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. Leaders have to be heard before they can expect anyone to respond to their change initiative. But there are a lot of impediments to people's ability to hear what is actually being said. As this episode reveals, one of the biggest is our assumptions. They are countless in number and exist both individually and collectively. Just speaking of the new can be enough to trigger them. Thankfully, leaders have powerful tools in their communication to nullify them. As we continue through Amplify, Jonathan, the next card coming up also gets to, in effect, what are you going to need to say to those who potentially can help you ignite your change in order for them to A, hear you, and B, respond in the ways willingly where they choose to help you. So please read the next question.
What do they assume about this? Assumptions influence the choices we make, including the decision to act or not. Surfacing the positive and negative assumptions they hold about your meaningful change helps ensure you express what inclines them to act. We've talked a lot, rightfully, about positive and negative assumptions that we hold and that others hold. I feel that's our starting point here. And surfacing them. Yeah, how do we surface the positive and negative assumptions of others? Through conversation. Obviously, you rightfully said, Marianne, that conversation at this stage will be absolutely critical. Rigorous, open, honest conversations. Because how else would you go through this moment that we're describing here? So surfacing positive and negative assumptions. Again, I'm drawn to the necessary difficulty of this phase. It should bring joy and energy as well, but something's telling me there will be difficult moments too. We covered that in the previous card was very much about that, almost a filtering process of trying to find the people who will help you, who are most with whom the vision resonates most. With positive and negative assumptions here. Yeah, this is really important. What do they assume about this?
Can we go to the word assumption?
Yeah.
Because you're already going there, I want to make sure everyone is with you on this shared background of understanding on what assumptions are.
Please, yep.
I'll pull it through a few threads and I think you'll see the one of most,
right,
that's most paramount. It's a statement that's assumed to be true and from which a conclusion can be drawn. That's an assumption. A hypothesis that's taken for granted. The act of taking possession of or power over something. Audacious, even arrogant behavior that you have no right to. Or, last and not least, the act of assuming or taking for granted.
What does assume mean? Do you have that definition?
Go there.
So it loaded for me now.
Oh, good.
So it's to take, the verb is to take, to be the case, or to be true. Here's where truth comes in. Accept without verification or proof. Take on titles, offices, duties, responsibilities. Take on a certain form, attribute, or aspect. Take on as one's own the expenses or debts of another person. Occupy or take on. Seize and take control without authority and possibly with force. Take as one's right or possession. Make a pretense of. Synonyms here are to simulate sham and feign. Take on someone's soul into heaven. Take up someone's soul into heaven, excuse me. I have to admit, that's the first I've heard of that one. Put clothing on one's body. This is where the nudist colony comes in.
And everything you're describing, and my screen is still blank, which is interesting in itself. Everything you're describing, Catherine, is the verb to assume. Assumption being the noun. Inter, of course, connected. What pulls your focus out of all of that, Jonathan?
The quick and easy way to answer this, and I'm sort of getting it out of the way because I sense it's not the right answer, but I'm just going to put it there as a starting point, is that this is about, as you surface their assumptions, you are very, very carefully choosing the right words to give shape and form to your vision, to describe it. And that by doing that, that will surface those assumptions, but it will also help to navigate them. But I'm reaching out for something that comes before that, that's more fundamental than that. I'm seeing the enormous and various risks of misunderstanding here, you know, assumptions that lead to misunderstanding.
I also see a danger in them leading to conclusions where conclusions are those stakes in the ground. Mm-hmm. Once someone, for whatever reason, concludes something, whether it be based on any truth whatsoever, that's where they stand.
Yeah, and they won't leave. Unshakable.
That fixedness.
Yes, exactly. And that to that degree, assumptions have a power over us.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Or disempowering effect.
If I go back to the words of the vision, I'm not going to read them out again, but just that there's something again here about words and language and how we form sentences as we go into conversation. We've all had this feeling, haven't we, at one time or another, where you begin to explain something to somebody. It might be sharing news, good news, positive news, or a new idea, and you feel great. Confident, you're happy, full of energy. But within seconds, you've lost the person in some way. They've disconnected.
They've tuned out.
Yeah, yeah. That there's something in the eyes or the mouth. And it's a real shock because you're just full of the energy, you know, and you're excited. And very, very quickly, the other person's tuned out. Yeah. We know that feeling and it's awful.
And yet you assumed they would be as excited as you.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really shocking moment. It's an awful, and I can see myself in various situations, in all sorts of different situations, where your own assumption has met with their assumptions, and there's been a collision or just a complete mismatch. So this is where I'm heading at the moment. You know, in the previous conversation where we talked about the vision ending up not as lines of text, as a list or a checklist or Article 1 of the Constitution, but a sphere that you would feel it. I think that's one of the reasons why that's where I want to get to. So that there is something so compelling about all aspects of the vision that people would get it in one go. Maybe not convinced for a lifetime, no, would come back and ask questions, sure. But in a first instance, would see the whole picture, would feel that they're inside that vision and like it and want to sign up. Because, and again, I'm going back to language and the card here is really interesting, assumptions. Without naming or lingering on particular faces amongst the people I know, I do know that even as I read out the first lines of my vision, I see furrowed brows, small smiles of recognition, but skeptical recognition, certainly no energy. Or certainly no desire to come forward and embrace it. So there's a challenge here about language. There's a challenge about how you present the vision, because each word that you lay on the page or that you speak, that you breathe outwards towards them is going to trigger, it inevitably triggers assumptions. Going back to lenses, assumptions are a form of lens. I prefer to see assumptions as something more insiders, that we don't perhaps walk around with assumptions covering our eyes, but they're within us. We've absorbed them, yeah, of a long time. Deep assumptions, yeah. That's where I'm coming from here. Negative, positive.
And some are based on actual experience.
Precisely.
That happened to me. So I can assume in this environment, this setting, this time, it's going to happen again. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is what I know.
Yeah.
I can rely on it to some degree. I can assume it is going to happen again.
Mm. I'm also drawn back to something I scribbled about the previous card and the previous conversation, which is that we're in that very productive stream of work here. A moment of testing of the vision, not testing it in the sense of with the consumer, not consumer testing, not test driving a car.
Not focus group testing.
No, it's something else. It comes before that. If you really deeply believe in your vision, you're confident in it, you feel that it's your truth, you're not going to question the vision. In conversation with a close circle or people beyond that, people you want to come forward and offer their hand, you want them to help you ignite the change. Conversation with these people will provoke negatively or positively their assumptions. So it I'm seeing it as a necessary moment. It's a further testing of the vision.
Do you in any way see the assumptions they hold as blockades separating you from them, making it challenging for you to reach them, touch them?
Yes.
At all? Yeah.
Blockades, perhaps variations of fatigue as well, that we're back to the old and the new. The new, I feel, comes later in the language I've used so far. I would hope that a shared home as a starting point would trigger some emotional response. Then I feel that through the language of freedom and dignity, we're into something familiar, which may trigger the negative assumption of familiarity. Hey, tell us something new. I mean, you are reading out an article. You are reading out Article 2 of the European Union Treaty, aren't you? So this is not an assumption of disagreement. It's not a value assumption. A different philosophical standpoint from experience or from their own ideas, but just the old and the new, an assumption which says, "Ooh, this isn't very new." Whereas where I ended up in the previous conversation, which I'm, and it gives me a sense of confidence. It's the vision as a whole wrapped up, and how all the different parts of it feed into each other and support each other. Again, a bit like a house. That's the value in it. That's where the energy comes from, and that's where the novelty comes from as well. So my experience and my assumptions tell me that my people, to use a contemporary meme, my people in terms of assumptions, I was going to say we'll want to hear something new. I don't think it's as simple as that. Actually, some assumptions will be, let me take a step back. I'm trying to see deeper into the question rather than find the right answer. What do they assume about this? There are going to be assumptions about me before I've said anything.
Are these assumptions coming from people who know you, or could others as well?
Both
make assumptions.
Both, I think both. I've not said this yet. I felt it floating around, but I'm saying it now because we know this, yeah. Assumptions exist and express themselves before the other person has even spoken. Yeah, that's including amongst people that we know. Do I want my vision to upset some of the assumptions of my closest circle? Yes. because otherwise it's not a new vision. I feel at ease with that. If everybody was in some way upset and didn't recognize me at all, that might feel a bit weird and might send me a different signal. But I'm certainly very open to the idea that there will be a necessary upsetting of existing assumptions about me. Mm. And who I am and why I'm doing this.
Mm. Remember we had that conversation about unfreezing the system?
Yes.
Mm. And how that's necessary sometimes.
Yeah.
In order to affect change, what is has to be unfrozen. For example, had the Japanese not bombed Pearl Harbor, the Americans wouldn't have entered World War II. It unfroze the system of the prevailing sentiments of not wanting to get involved. You know, it wasn't our war, right? It unfroze, provoked them to action. So maybe if there are any assumptions about you by those who, starting with those who know you, maybe you have to mm-hmm. provoke them to mm-hmm. unfreeze that, to move them
yes.
to. And Jonathan, I have to say, because it's screaming at me in yeah. my head, we're speaking in Amplify about expressing your vision and the whole narrative around your vision, not just the words, the mm-hmm. succinctness of your vision, the messaging, the narrative. We're speaking about expressing it so that you can reach those who will help you to realize it. But you do see, of course, that they are also the people that you need to help ignite. Not just as a member of your collective, you need them to embody your vision of a shared home individually.
Yes. And that brings me back to the necessary difficulty of this phase, where the first instance of surfacing these assumptions may be uncomfortable for both of us, but that has to happen. Is that person necessarily lost? No. That's the nature of assumptions. Mm. Assumptions in themselves are not the truth and don't determine...
Assumptions themselves are not the truth.
Right. Yeah.
Put a pin on that.
Yeah. And don't determine all of the responses of that person for the next day, week, year.
Even when, as Catherine says, they can put a stake in the ground there and not want to be moved because it's what they know, they're on terra firma. And you're telling them, go to new ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Are there different kinds or categories of assumptions? Give me an example if you want. Maybe they're
In the previous discussion, I was sort of reaching for that, mm-hmm. not so much through the language of the vision itself, mm-hmm. but going to mm-hmm. really the depths of how we are different. So whether we are accepting of not just religious language, let's say spiritual language,
right.
but ideas that flow from that or not, yeah. that's pretty fundamental. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're beyond political viewpoints here, those assumptions.
Yeah.
This stuff goes deep. I think jumping to that mm-hmm. third level, our need for each other, there's some heavy stuff in there mm-hmm. that's going to rub up against assumptions. In some cases, the opposite. I know I have good friends who would, I wouldn't say would feel offended, but are going to be much more drawn to the need for, you know, individuals to take responsibility for their own problems and sort them out. And that not being in any way an aggressive or even individualistic viewpoint, but one which says that talks about responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that our first responsibility is to ourselves, and we must mm-hmm. so that's another one, which is, you know, we're beyond politics again, and it's mm-hmm. the deep assumptions. Mm-hmm. These are deep attitudes.
And if you look at recent experience within that framework, they've got evidence that, well, I had to do that during the pandemic. I had to lift myself up. I had to protect myself. I had to, you know, readjust whatever, because I couldn't rely on the outside world. The outside world I couldn't enter. I was in isolation. So you've got all kinds of...
Let's take a look at this gnarly ball of tangled assumptions here. Mm-hmm. What if what you're facing is a mix of logic-based assumptions? Evidence says we must, yep. So therefore, obviously you are.
And that's my experience.
There you go. Value-based assumptions?
Yes.
Trauma-based assumptions?
Yes.
If I do this, I get hurt because I have gotten hurt, so mm-hmm. I'm assuming you'll hurt me if you do this.
Yes.
Political assumptions?
Yes.
Cultural?
Yes.
Assumptions?
Gender?
Gender assumptions?
Sure.
What does that mean?
Well, as a woman, you may assume, and depending on the culture, you may assume you will always be treated as X, whatever X may be.
Mm, okay. Private-based assumptions? Private assumptions you don't share with the world, and yet that guide you with everything you do. And then the public assumptions that people are willing to wear on their sleeve because they form part of their public identity. So looking at those simply as a cross-section of a sampling.
Yeah. There are even more. You're right.
I'm sure there are tons.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge.
Huge.
It's a huge library of assumptions.
Yeah.
And if I go into the second level, that second level of the vision where we talk about the celebration, so the loving respect of difference and the celebration of difference, I can see both in my inner circle but also beyond people who I would want to have with me, who I would assume, my assumptions about dignity and freedom and solidarity, to take one and three, would say these people are going to be with me. This is going to resonate with them. Will feel uncomfortable because they will say, well, on that second section about identity, I hear you, but well, sorry to break the news, but you would say that because through luck, you have lived in a world where your identity is always safe and protected.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, in my world, we don't feel safe, and that's why we're putting our identity front and center as a way of protecting it, restoring dignity that has been lost. So that all of these assumptions are true, authentic, genuine, and all I can say at this stage is a proper rigorous test of the vision itself in its content. Again, this is the flow, the very good flow, the healthy flow between illuminate and amplify. So between the discovery and the articulation of the vision on the one hand, and on the other hand, how we amplify it. So there's a very good testing of the vision itself, but also a testing of how we actually get people to come on board. And they go hand in hand here, which feels right, because of the type of vision this is. I don't think this could... I'm just daydreaming for a second here, or just, I don't know, free-floating for a second. If I see this as a type of vision, a particular type of political, cultural vision which lives and breathes, and which is, as I said to you, Marianne, in the previous conversation, in some ways the beginning of a conversation. What is this vision? It's a conversation starter. Then... all of this feels very true and necessary, this surfacing of assumptions. It's almost as if part of the vision itself is about surfacing assumptions. Do you see what I mean? But certainly a really, really important and necessary part of the of amplifying and finding the means to amplify and finding the people who will amplify, but also testing the vision itself.
What if the hypothetical can serve you to cut through the assumptions, whether positive or negative? What if you could, using the power of rhetoric, pose a rhetorical question as a what if? What if?
That's a lovely way of putting it. I mean, and that's a great way to start a conversation. I mean, it's a great way to start a line. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to start a sentence. It's a great way to start a speech actually.
It is overused in speeches, I would say, but still.
Right. Yeah. But it gets through the unnecessary throat clearing, you know, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
We're here
exactly.
today.
Exactly.
What yeah. if?
And that this is not, I'm looking at Catherine, this is not to invoke the power of the imagination. This is actually to help them cross that chasm with you. Because you're helping them see it. It's not the head. You're helping them feel it, see it, making it a sensory experience for them.
Yeah, that really rings true. And it's my answer to you, what I'm giving you in return at this stage is this, I think this is where this idea of the sphere is coming from. So the vision, not as a list, as a checklist, but as something which in its wholeness and the way that all the different parts of the vision wrap around each other and feed each other and support each other, locking together into something that's strong and robust. And because we're reconciling tensions, yeah? This is, we talked briefly about what the wonder, the heroic wonder of what politics can and should be and has been sometimes in the past, where we imagine a future together and we want to create that future and we genuinely believe in a better world, the possibility of a better world. Politics was just about possibility. This is possible. I'm seeing the sphere as something that is working towards that. And I love your hypothetical, what if? And it's not trying to be reasonable. It's not a sphere that covers all of the bases and says, don't worry, there's something for you here as well. That's a dead end. That's not the right approach. The challenge I'm seeing here, and I'm sort of parking this for now, there's no easy answer to this, but the challenge I'm seeing for myself is how do you confront somebody's assumptions, whatever they are, and they will be there. How do you get through that?
This is where conversation comes in.
Tell me, go for it.
You have to be able to hear them. You have to be outside of your own head and in the conversation so deeply, so naked. You have no assumptions. You have no beliefs. You have no conclusions that you've previously established, and that's where you come from. You have no inclination to think about what you're going to say next while they're talking, because isn't that the way we have a conversation? Instead, you're fully present, and you fully listen to and hear their words. And not only do you hear their words, you're reading for patterns. And you are examining the implications of the words they use and the specific sequences they put them in. All of those are significant clues that reveal their assumptions. I spoke a bit today about formulas. Assumptions are essentially formulas. You love me if. And I know you'll love me if, because we have a contract. So I'm assuming you're going to love me if, because you just said you would. In that example, I'm assuming you know how to make a goddamn decision. Not many people do, because there is an assumption that if they make a decision, they will get hurt. Because once upon a time, they made a decision, and this is where trauma-based assumption comes in, and they are so traumatized and remain so traumatized that they will do everything they can to avoid making a decision. What they don't recognize is not making a decision as a decision in itself. So listening in the conversation gives you all the clues and reveals all of their assumptions, the ones that are relevant in your exchange. And from there, you can decide where to go in the conversation.
And if we follow from that, do you think that if through the listening we hear their assumption, we see it, and we have some understanding of what that assumption is and why it's there, there may be some way to fade away or to be challenged.
No, you can obliterate them in an instant. You just have to know what to say. And the way to know what to say is not to come into the conversation from the mind. So you talk about the heart, you talk about the soul. You have to come from, I wouldn't say an omniscient state, that's a bit much, but coming from a state where you are more than your thoughts and your beliefs combined. And from that space, you can connect much more deeply. And then the truth of the words can surface. And then the only thing left for you to do is to decide whether to say them. And that's where, again, courage comes in. That's where stepping out of one's comfort zone may come in. And that's where exiting the life as it relates to you comes in. So now you're not living your life. You're not living that moment. And you're not in that conversation for yourself at all.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. Just to give ourselves one border, outer frontier, just for clarity, I'm assuming here that even within our first circles, where we might assume support, resonance, there may be people whose assumptions are just too rigid in some way, or too far away from the core of the vision that, at least for now, they just have to reject.
Absolutely.
Their assumption almost obliges them to reject it outright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you'll hear one of two things very often in that conversation with that person. You'll hear them either say, well, let's agree to disagree. Or they'll say, well, that's your opinion. And when they draw those definitive lines, they're saying to you, I don't want to go where you want me to go with you. I don't accept your invitation. What you're saying is making me at my core uncomfortable in a way I don't want to face. So please stop.
And let's go back to what we had before, you and I. So assumptions, you also have another tool at your disposal, a rather unique one in your unique declaration. Because if you think about assumptions, they emerge from and govern what is now and how one acts based on what is now. Mm-hmm. And they also emerge from and governed the past, what was. So both what was and what is now. You are creating a future, a state that does not yet exist. And you provided yourself with a very powerful declaration. So, do you remember what it is?
Today, we break with the past, and together, we stand on new ground.
So whatever was, whatever is now, that was then. Today we break with that from even a moment ago. So any prevailing assumptions you're giving, by making a declaration, we declare what could be, but we also give permission and space for others to act on it. To first see it, feel it, and then ultimately act on it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that last idea because, again, it's speaking to the suppleness within the vision as something that's not rigid, not static, that allows people in, that can accommodate a variety of people, not through its own striving to be reasonable, but through the listening, through conversation, through an agreement to try and speak together without assumption. That makes a lot of sense.
And when you are to ignite meaningful change, those you are to reach, to experience, and or to help you in igniting it, may not have any knowledge, understanding, or experience of what that new is. Or they may have had a glimpse of it at some point, and then they may or may not remember that.
Which is where your embodiment of your vision is paramount.
That's where you make the hypothetical tangible.
Yeah, I see that.
The importance of assumptions, of surfacing assumptions, and as Catherine enumerated so many of them, different categories of them, let alone all the specifics within those you are going to speak to, is to help you tailor what you say to them. That is the value. Because if you don't, and they are harboring assumptions that don't allow them to hear you, that's a lost opportunity for them and for you. In your case, there's so much that is unique to you, Jonathan, as you move forward with this, so much. This is never about being formulaic, but when I teach principles of effective dialogue to my clients, one of them is declare assumptions to ensure that you're operating on the same understanding, even nomenclature, that's a cup, that's a table, you know, yeah. Right? With view to ensuring you connect with each other. You're going to do that at a higher level. And it may or may not be necessary for you in the course of your conversations to surface any assumptions that may be hindering them. It may be that you go above and beyond them with declarations and with hypotheticals. You have a number of tools at your disposal, and it's going to be very much a bespoke experience as to which you use when.
You're reminding me, Marianne, about something a friend said to me a few years back in Brussels, and it's somebody who works in the scientific department of the European Commission, and somebody who has studied the relationship between our values and our decision making. And what this means for our modern politics and how public institutions and governments should communicate. And he said to me once, and I think it's sort of complementing what you have just said, Marianne, he said, the way we can begin to convince people or some people is through metaphor. Metaphor is a key that helps to unlock resistance or get us to the other side together with another person. And there's something, I can't quite grasp it, but I think there is something here, because it's what fiction does as well. Fiction uses metaphor, and it's a tool that allows us to see something, feel something, share something without being distracted or pushed away by the surface, the facts of the thing. So it's not a delusion, it's not a trick. We're not tricking people. That again, there is a pursuit of truth here, but it's perhaps a way of, you know, taking somebody to the other side with us through metaphor, where if just a bald statement of a reality or a description of a reality would fail.
And could that be a way of helping them cross the chasm of possibility? Because when you say reality, if current reality is so stark on this front, then it truly is a quantum leap, isn't it, to get to the other side. So if you can use the power of metaphor.
Mm. Yes. I mean, a metaphor in itself is about the one side of a thing and the other side.
Exactly.
It's a transformation or a translation. It's a way of seeing something, sensing something beyond the initial visible facade, which in some ways is insufficient or narrow, harsh, and which allows the reader of the metaphor to get to the other side and glimpse something bigger. Yeah.
And something bigger in a non-threatening way.
As I said, I don't think the goal here is to get rid of people's assumptions. It's getting beyond them in a good way. Mm-hmm. We can't bulldoze our way through them. Mm-hmm. We can't force our way through them.
The good way is to get them in a state of being inclined.
Yeah.
To act.
Yes, yes.
On your vision.
Yes.
So to break through the anything impeding their ability to make the decision to act or not.
Yes, yes.
Without recognizing right now, Jonathan, the myriad of potential assumptions, good and bad, where we land on this is in recognizing how to leverage other tools in order to ensure assumptions are not impediments to the vision, to realizing the vision of a shared home. Does that sum it up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for completion, I want to just bring back in the one you made right at the beginning, because I think it's very powerful that one of the ways to do this, I hope I'm paraphrasing faithfully what you said earlier, is to begin to give sense of a new world where that there are not assumptions yet, a world without assumptions, and you know, and that's through the ability to imagine something together. Let's be clear that the new ground is, as I've said many times before, it's not a new planet with no colours and no air, just a flat surface on which to build this new world. No, we're not saying that. But can we not together, in a conversation, talk about something new where it's not built on assumptions? Isn't that the power of ideas in their pure form? They don't have a starting point as such. An assumption is also a starting point. Based on this assumption, we will do X, Y, Z.
Right, right, you know? Yeah.
What we're trying to do here is see something that is new, not because it's on a new planet or come from a new planet, but doesn't start with an assumption, but with an urge and a desire to create something new. I think that's sort of where we're trying to get to.
What if you use the metaphor for assumptions of baggage?
Mm, yeah.
And having just traveled to and from London with a lot of baggage, two suitcases alone filled with equipment for our podcasts, I can speak to how that inhibits an ease in travel. So if you are now telling them, we're breaking with the past, we're going on to new ground, imagine if it were baggage-free and the ease of travel.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah, yeah.
If assumptions are baggage, throw them overboard.
Yeah, yeah. And this is your hypothetical, I think, Maren, the healthy, necessary hypothetical here. You know, what if? Because at the heart of, if I'm going to be truthful about my vision, it comes with baggage, because it, at the heart of the vision is the idea that we're born into this world with baggage. And it's, we celebrate that, you know, when I talk about celebrating difference, that's celebrating baggage and not feeling weighed down by it, but sort of rolling up our sleeves and saying, okay, we're born in this world with all of our shapes and colors and frailties and demons. We're born with that baggage. Great. Now what are we going to do with it? That attitude is already forward looking.
Yes, it is.
You know, and that's also back to the listening that Catherine talked about. Listening to others, also listening to ourselves. And there's acceptance here. There is a deep acceptance within the vision, which is saying we are born with baggage. And there's no need to get tied up in that. We don't need to tie ourselves up in knots about the baggage. It's not heavy. There's no weight to that baggage. I love your image of traveling. I love to travel light. I love to travel light. I really do. It's acceptance of the baggage, and it doesn't have to weigh us down. It's just there.
Do we bring our individual baggage with us into your shared home?
We do. We do bring our individual baggage, but not feeling its weight. Accepting that it's part of who we are, okay. but also refusing to let it define us. And this is, you know, this is what transcendence is about, isn't it? It's there. I recognize it. I see it. I had no choice in it.
And it doesn't have to weigh us down.
Doesn't have to weigh us down. Doesn't have to define us. Doesn't have to stop us working with, you know, talking with and working with other people who may, at this level of, you know, appear to have very different baggage. Mm. But it's not, I think critically, it's not refusing it either. It's not trying to get rid of it. Or
that's an important distinction.
Yes.
And you see how.
Yes. Yeah.
That can be reassuring in itself, can't it? To anyone with baggage.
I would hope so.
You don't have to be perfect in this new shared home.
Sure. No, absolutely. That's a central part of it. Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Assumptions, both others and their own, can be very costly to leaders. Being unaware of them can, in fact, put your meaningful change in jeopardy. And yet it is so easy to make assumptions, particularly when a change is so evident to you that you can see the benefit of it to them readily. So how can they not? You then go ahead and speak of it as if this were already a given and build your case for change from there. In reality, though, their assumptions can prevent them from even hearing you. When something doesn't make sense to us, when it's contrary to what we know and believe based on our own experience, we tune out, and the leader's words fall on deaf ears. If, as a leader, you do become aware of the gap, chasm between your perspective and theirs, well, then you have a chance to bridge it. You can ensure and convey that you have the right conversation in which you were fully present so that you actually hear them. And you can pose the powerful hypothetical question, what if, to help move them from where they may be affixed in the now to where they could start to see what could be. You can also harness the power of metaphor, as Jonathan does so effectively. There's one other possibility that surfaced in the question Jonathan asked himself at the end of our conversation. Is it possible to create something new that is not built on any assumptions? Imagine that. One thing's for sure, though. Whatever we do, we can't let whatever baggage we're carrying right now weigh us down. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change. Thank you.